Magic lamp? Wonder what happens when I rub it.
You have awakened me. I shall grant you 3 wishes.
My first wish is for economic development. My second wish is to save hours of travel time. And my third wish is to create safer roads.
You could have just wished for bus rapid transit and gotten all these things with one wish.
Make all your transit wishes come true. Learn more about bus rapid transit at indigo.net/bus-rapid-transit.
For a dining experience that makes you feel refreshed, rejuvenated, and even inspired, visit the Honeysuckle Hill Bistro. Located on a beautiful lakeside property in Brazil, the Bistro is a made-from-scratch boutique restaurant that is open April through December. At the Honeysuckle Hill Bistro, the only thing that might top their down-home cooking is the gorgeous lakeside view while you eat. Open Friday and Saturday for dinner and Sunday mornings for brunch. Escape to something different with the Honeysuckle Hill Bistro in peaceful Brazil. For reservations, menu options, and more, call 812-443-3003. FreedomFoodsIndiana.com is here to bring fresh fruits and vegetables right to your door. No need to ever leave the home or deal with the stress that is having to go to the store. FreedomFoodsIndiana.com makes it easy to order fresh fruits and vegetables online with the click of a mouse. I'm Rob Kendall. I love FreedomFoodsIndiana.com, and I know you will too. It's a great way to keep your family eating right without the hassle of having to shop. FreedomFoodsIndiana.com. Rob Kendall, Jim Merritt, Abdullah Kib Shabazz, the program is State House Happenings, your weekly look at what's going on with Indiana politics and government. Before we begin the show, let's meet the award-winning panel. You know it from 30 years in the Indiana Senate. Rose all the way to number 2, the great Jim Merritt. Hello.
Robert.
And you know him as the owner and operator of IndyPolitics.org and the star of the show this week, Abdullah Kib Shabazz. Hello.
I think it's my second time starring on the show this week.
Oh, yes. You're doing all the work these days.
Yeah.
Okay. So you did usually once or twice a year. You're IndyPolitics.org umbrella. You conduct a scientific poll on various political matters.
Yes. And this year, with our friends at Crossroads Strategies, who once again helped us out financing this puppy, we got a hold of our friend Andrew Weiser, who does ARW Strategies. They are a polling firm in Northern Illinois. And I use him because he's close enough to Indiana, so he's familiar with the issues, but not so close that he can be biased one way or another for another candidate. And so we did a poll, 500 likely Republican voters. This is extremely important because we wanted to know where Republican primary voters were, particularly with the issues with the governor's race and a lot of other things that are going on here in the state of Indiana. So we polled 500 likely voters between March 24th and 25th and had a margin of error of about 4.4%, which is normal for a poll of that size. And the results were...
Okay, wait. Before we get to the results, I want to just ask a couple questions about polling. I'm super curious about this. Was this a phone poll? Was this the internet? How did we conduct the informants or the respondents? Right,
phone and text messages.
Okay, perfect. All right. So, how do you decide how to word a question? Because there's a specific question that I want to that I thought was interesting. We actually talked about it on Kendall and Casey, and I thought, well, I'm going to ask Abdul. Who decides how to word the question?
Actually, Andrew and I both work together.
Okay.
On the wording. Usually what I would do is like, hey, here's what I'm interested in, the governor's race, you know, who's good on economic development, what do you think the big issues are, and then he'll phrase the question, he'll submit the questions to me, and then we just kind of go through like, hey, this fair, straightforward. It's not, hey, if you knew that Jim Merritt, you know, ate your children, would you still vote for him?
Right.
It's, you know, the ultimate sort of push polling to elicit a negative response. We don't do that. We just basically ask a question, you know, straight up.
Okay, so is there a reason you picked 500? Is there a strategy behind that?
500 statewide. Anytime you have between 400 and I'd say 600, you're in a really good place. If you have too few samples, you don't get a good enough accuracy, and then there becomes a point where you sort of overdo it. Now if you do like a nationwide survey, then like 1,000,
right?
You know, 2,000 people would be good. But we just chose 500, and and there's a difference between registered voters and likely voters,
right?
Because registered voters is good for like a beauty contest just to get the voters' opinions. But likely voters, these are people actually going to show up and vote.
How do you determine that? How do you determine who's a likely voter? You ask them that?
Yeah.
Oh,
you plan to vote in the primary.
Yeah, okay.
And it's all Republicans. You did not poll Democrats.
No, there were some Democrats who said they plan to vote in the Republican primary. But that was a big thing. Do you plan to vote in the Republican primary? Is our big.
Ah, okay. All right. Okay.
And 90% of them were Republicans.
All right. So let's get to the big one, which is the governor's race. And I think this is pretty much spot on because it's kind of where the other polls have been trending, which is Braun is in the lead, but he's clearly lost support and there's a whole bunch of undecideds.
Yes. We asked for the Republican primary were held today for governor. Who would you vote for? Was Braun at 33%. It was Brad Chambers at 10%, Eric Doden at 10%. Suzanne Crouch at like 10%. Also, in addition to, we had Curtis Hill at 3.4 and Jamie Rittenour at 1.8.
Okay, so basically the race now is, and this is kind of how it's been leaning, Braun is still the front runner. However, he has, because remember Merritt in the beginning, his internals and there was other polls, oh, he's at 40% or 41%.
Yeah, he was strong.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's now, this is what, like three or four polls in a row mm-hmm. that have come out where he's somewhere between 30 and 35, which you're like smack in the middle on that, right?
Yeah.
33. So he's clearly lost mm-hmm. some of his mojo.
Yeah, some
once
of
he's
the negative advertising against him, the immunity for police question, the idea that... he had talked about interracial marriages back in the state. There are a lot of things that his opponents have tagged on him, and he's probably very fortunate that he only lost 7% or so.
Well, he's also probably, and correct me if I'm wrong, Abdul, because you've got three people who are within a point of each other, Crouch, Doden, Chambers, but they're so far behind. He being Braun, is very lucky there's like nine people running.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but here's the thing, too. There are also a lot of undecided voters out there as well.
How do you find an undecided voter on a poll? Is that up front or is that the end? Or
We give the list of gubernatorial candidates. Who do you plan to vote for?
Right.
And we also give them undecided.
And this is a likely voter.
Yeah, it's okay. a likely undecided voter. And what was interesting in the undecided voter part was there are enough undecideds, I want to say like 31%, that if undecided was a candidate, undecided would become in second place.
How about uninterested?
I think they'd be first place.
But here's what's interesting about this to me is, okay, yeah, you're right. There's a lot of people who are undecided. However, I think it's foolhardy to think they're all going to break for one candidate or another. So if you're Doden, Crouch, Chambers, and you're 20 points behind, well, even if you got 20% of the undecideds and you know, Braun got the rest, which that's somewhat...
He's going to get a certain percentage.
Well, right. You're not going to make up 20. You're not going to make up 23%.
Here's the thing, though, because my pollster, we kind of talked about this. We're sort of going through the data, and we sort of came to the I call it informed speculation, because at the end of the day, and by the way, polls are not predictions, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
They're snapshots in time.
In March 25th.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Shows you what it looks like today. Talk to tomorrow. Could have totally different responses. What I don't think the undecided voters are going to go to Mike Braun, and here's why. Because in Mike Braun's own polling, he was like 47% back in November. That number is now down to like 31-33%.
Right.
And number two, if you look at where the undecided voters are going, because our friends at Fox 59 CBS4 also polled, and their undecideds are in the same category. The undecideds are not gravitating towards Mike Braun. The undecideds are going toward the other candidates. I think Braun has basically hit his floor, which is a third of the vote, which is fine, because you only need a plurality once again,
right,
to win. The question is, if you're Brad Chambers, Eric Doden, Suzanne Crouch, to a lesser degree, Curtis Hill, who do you go to in a nutshell? How do you appeal to those undecided voters?
Right, and when there's three of you, because there's let's face it, Curtis Hill has no chance, and he's run a terrible campaign,
and he's going to court on Monday.
Well, we get to that here in a little bit, but if there's basically three, right? It's Chambers, it's Doden, it's Crouch. The problem is there's three of you, and you're ideologically not all that different. So how do you, of the 33, 35% that are undecided, how do you get them all to go to you when there's three people who basically have identical views?
Well, that's the key to the last 12 months.
Right, Jim?
How do you separate yourself from all the other candidates and lessen Braun's elephant in the middle of the room? And it's very difficult.
I think what I wrote in a column that'll appear this weekend on indiepolitics.org, I wrote, if you're Brad Chambers, Eric Doden, Suzanne Crouch, you've got your base or your floor support. I would spend the next 30 days going for those undecided voters. Mm-hmm.
Can you peel off more from Braun? Because obviously if he's gone backwards, he's gone backwards. Is there more backwards to go? Or is the game plan, well, we got to get 20% of the 30% who are undecided? Like, what's the...
I think Braun's goal right now is just basically run out the clock.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sure. No, I know his goal,
year.
But I'm saying...
Do no harm.
If you're Crouch, if you're Doden, if you're Chambers, do you believe there's still more Braun people that you can unconvince? Or is it like, well, we just got to try to get all those 30%?
I would focus on those 30% undecided voters. And what I would do is, because I kind of said, here's my campaign commercial. Hi, I'm Eric Doden or Brad Chambers and Crouch. I'm running for governor. If you're undecided in this race, let me help you make up your mind.
Yeah.
I've done this, and I appeal to those undecided voters in every ad.
Could you look at that poll that you just you're talking about with the issues and switch horses to legalizing marijuana?
Actually, it's funny you bring up the legalizing marijuana part because let me scroll up.
You know, I'm a late comer for standards and making sure that we do it right. But
you know, you basically morphed into me, Merritt.
Is that a compliment?
You just basically become a much kinder, gentler me.
Well, the bottom line is that if you legalize marijuana correctly and with health standards and the total FDA type of approach, I maintain that if I would have run, that would have been one that in property taxes would have been a center point of my campaign, and from the looks of Abdul's poll, that's the opening.
Well,
but we're voting soon.
Abdul and I talked about this. So what, like overwhelmingly, and this has been polls been going on for years since even you were in the legislature, Merritt, overwhelmingly people support marijuana, both recreational and medicinal, certainly medicinal, right, Abdul? I mean, your poll shows that again.
Yeah, it was like 60-65% Republican primary voters in favor of both either medicinal, recreational, or both.
Yeah, so, but yet, every one of those candidates has come out and said they are against legalizing marijuana basically in any form. I mean, you got some mealy mouth thing about medical with a couple of them, but there's nobody up there that's like, yeah, I'm going to fight for this. But your poll shows people still, even Republican
65%?
Voters.
65% north. And even funnier thing, and this is where I love the crosstabs. When I looked in the crosstabs part, first of all, there seems to be this disconnect for the most part between their candidates and the Republican electorate.
Right.
But here's the funny thing. When I broke down like who's your support, who you want for governor, you know, Crouch, Doden, whatever, we in the crosstabs, we also sort of crosstabs the marijuana question, like do you support legalized marijuana? At the lowest number was like 60%. And you had the highest number of supporters, 80% Curtis Hill.
Right.
80% of Curtis Hill supporters supported legalized marijuana.
That really makes no sense. That's our fighting law enforcement. So
but this is what crosstabs my friend are for.
So our theory, Abdul and I came up with a theory that clearly the candidates believe, because there's overwhelming support for this even in the Republican Party, but clearly the candidates believe that the fervor for which the support is there does not outweigh the fervor for which there is not, and they believe the not is definitely going to show up to vote and you're going to piss those people off versus the four who, while they may be for it, their vote is not going to be cast based on that, and it's a calculated choice.
You see, but I would argue, too, when you're going for those undecided voters, though.
I agree.
And look for a way to separate yourself out of that crowd of people.
I hate agreeing with you, but you and I agree on this. Clearly, the candidates, though, do not, because they're all universally against it.
Well, only one of them's going to win, and neither one of us will lose.
Well, that's right.
It flies in the face of, well, it's a risk-adverse campaign.
Yes.
And you and I talked about this recently. It takes a lot of guts and courage to get out there on a limb, because all these candidates have been talking about issues that really don't affect the state of Indiana.
Yeah.
And it's what their polling showed. But we've seen, Abdul, we've seen polls for 2-3 years now that Indiana has moved on and wants to, the legislature, do a safe way of legalizing marijuana.
And I sent my marijuana polling results to State Representative Jake Tesha. Mm-hmm. Jake has been pushing for,
yep,
and hopefully this will give him a little bit more.
Well, you need somebody with a lot of courage and that's gonna hold the torch up.
Well, yeah,
on
and I maintained this for years, Merritt. You were in the legislature, so you can blink twice if I'm correct on this, because I know you're too nice to ever be mean to somebody. The problem is Jim Lucas has been the face of marijuana, and he is just loathed by so many people.
We've told him that.
Thank you.
Yeah, we've told him that, and you need somebody that has the will and the credibility and the leadership, if you will, to take this idea. I mean, we talked the legislature into passing a bill that allows teenagers to have immunity in a social situation when they're drunk, And so we talked the legislature into working around adoption laws with the safe haven law. So it takes somebody who is willing and has the guts and the courage to take this issue on and do it right.
So you're saying, Jim, only Nixon can go to China? Well, if I use a Watergate reference.
I think what he's saying, right, is, and it does, it takes someone with gravitas and who is respected, someone like a Jim Merritt, who you'd say, well, it's kind of outside of his box. If he's for this, you know, there's really something to this, versus Jim Lucas, who is regularly an embarrassment.
Well,
and
it also takes a plan. You've got to gravitate towards the,
right,
the end result and take it over two or three sessions so that you get people used to it. Now it's spotty. And I'm glad Jake is working on this issue. It's going to take people in leadership of both chambers, as well as talking to our future governor, who obviously doesn't want it.
How long did it take to get Sunday retail alcohol sales in
Long,
Indiana?
Long time.
How long did it take to get daylight savings time?
Yeah,
in
and now
people want legal pot, really?
Yeah, and also the money angle, where it's just incredibly cash is king in that regard, and that's not convincing people. In
the state, and actually, House. The biggest anti-marijuana lobby in Indiana right now is Illinois, Michigan, Ohio,
probably,
and Kentucky.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a weekend away, then book the beautiful Honeysuckle Hill Cottage in peaceful Brazil. Located next to the Honeysuckle Hill Bistro, the Honeysuckle Hill Cottage is a beautiful lakeside property featuring a 3-bedroom, 2-bath bed and breakfast. Quiet, isolated, and an incredible view. The Honeysuckle Hill Cottage is the getaway you deserve without breaking the bank. For reservations, call 812-443-3003. Or visit honeysucklehillbee.com to view the cottage.
FreedomFoodsIndiana.com is here to bring fresh fruits and vegetables right to your door. No need to ever leave the home or deal with the stress that is having to go to the store. FreedomFoodsIndiana.com makes it easy to order fresh fruits and vegetables online with the click of a mouse. I'm Rob Kendall. I love FreedomFoodsIndiana.com, and I know you will too. It's a great way to keep your family eating right without the hassle of having to shop. FreedomFoodsIndiana.com.
Rob Kendall, Jim Merritt, Abdul-Hakim Shabazz. The program is State House Happenings, your weekly look at what's going on with Indiana politics and government. We're talking about this poll Abdul has. You have it all up at IndyPolitics.org. Is that right?
Yeah, for the most part, everything is up at IndyPolitics.org.
Go
now.
See it for yourself. Now, obviously, the big loser in this poll, based on expectations when he entered the race, is Curtis Hill. I mean, you've got him well behind the second-place people, Crouch, Doden, Chambers, in the single digits.
Yeah, Curtis in single digits, which... It sort of surprised me, but didn't surprise me. I figured he would get more of that, you know, ideological, conservative.
I just don't think he's made a case. He's not on TV. He's not on radio that I'm aware of.
It goes back to cash is king. Money is king. He got into it with a foundation of support. We always talked about he rolled out of the House in the morning with 12%, 15%. Now it's like four. And that tells you a campaign that just didn't get any momentum. And we all know it's about the $5 to $10 to $15 million that you've got to have to run for governor in Indiana.
Yeah, and if you're not going to raise that money, and clearly he's not very good at raising money,
no.
You've got to be really interesting to garner a bunch of earned media. Yeah. It's like Trump didn't need to run ads in 2016 because he was just super interesting, and you put him on TV, and a bajillion people are going to watch.
He's also already a TV star anyway.
Right. Yeah. Curtis Hill, I think, had the ability to be interesting. I think he's just been largely uninteresting, and people are just like, whatever, gave you a shot.
Well, also, people laugh about this, but he set himself up for a convention fight to become the next attorney general.
Now, that's your theory, right?
Yeah.
Is he's going to lose this governor's race and then he's going to run for attorney general.
Turn right around and run for attorney general again.
Three strikes and you're out, though. This would be three strikes for him. I mean, he lost the attorney general's race in 20. He lost the U.S. House race a couple years ago.
Yeah, but
he's
the convention delegate is different. You know, there's that basis out there of a voter that'll be a delegate that it just all depends on what happens to the current occupant of that office.
Okay, so let's pivot and talk about Mike Braun. So Mike Braun got fined by the FEC. Now, Abdul, let's start with a question about to you. I'll pose this question to you. What would the FEC maybe look more sternly on? Someone who misreports donations or someone who just makes up donations? Who might be likely to be in more trouble?
Well, I would argue, depending on what you're running for and how wide profile your office is, I would probably go into more of that determination. But I would argue, basically making stuff up is a little bit different than misreporting.
Sure. Like donors who don't exist?
Yeah.
Like that's a pretty big deal?
Donors who don't exist, the dollar amounts are over the federal limits. So just basically put a big giant target on your back and say, shoot me, please.
Okay.
I'm speaking metaphorically.
Yeah. Don't get yourself in trouble.
Again.
Braun was fined, that was $159,000,
right,
which is one of the largest fines in the history of the FEC, mm-hmm, over, I guess the way easy way to summarize this is misreporting loans on his U.S. Senate race in 2018. This thing took basically five-ish years to adjudicate, and boy, did they bring the hammer down, Merritt.
Oh, absolutely, and this has been going, as you said, this has been going on his whole term of office, And I just got something just recently. One of the opponents started attacking Braun on this issue, and this has been red meat for a long time.
Well, it's been out there forever.
Yeah,
and the thing is too, because I recall writing a story a few years ago about Braun and some campaign finance issues, and he blamed it on his former campaign finance treasurer.
Yeah, they blamed it on the treasurer.
But you know what? When you sign your name at the bottom, it doesn't matter what your treasurer did. It is you signed and you tested everything.
We
is
both
true.
Know, and Rob, you too, is when you signed, when you're the candidate, and I had to stomach some things through the years, it's your responsibility.
Yeah, so let's talk about that, because that's their approach, is they're trying to say, well, this treasurer screwed up. Wait a second. You're going to tell me in a race where I think there was something like $20 million raised, spent, whatever, that you've got one individual and no one's checking the work? No, you don't have some attorney, some FEC compliance person being like, nah, man, like the treasurer's... They are acting like this was some sort of city council race where you're struggling to get your neighbor Larry to, anybody to be your treasurer. This is a U.S. Senate race and they're trying to pass it off on some buffoon treasurer.
Well, look at it this way, though. We had a comma problem this year with Medicaid dollars, $1 billion. And probably not a whole lot of our listeners know this, but that moved on. No one got fired. Nothing happened other than there are a lot of people that came to the State House are very mad about Medicaid funds. And so what the Braun people are trying to do is kind of the opposite of crisis management. Just get out of the media cycle of the $159,000 and move on. And it's going to be interesting because I think we all agree that if something doesn't happen in the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, U.S. Senator Braun is going to be the Indiana governor.
Mike Braun wants to be your governor, but he can't even keep track of his campaign finance funds.
Well,
we can't trust Mike Braun. How can we trust Mike Braun? This mess is paid for by Crossroads.
But I mean, but seriously, it's like it does kind of show you how this guy's going to govern. Because don't forget, in the first debate, in a random, confused, accidental act of candidate accountability, Brad Chambers, now he got the number wrong, but talked about Braun voting for that COVID money. And Braun's excuse was, well, everybody else did it.
Yeah.
And so now you've got that. Okay, so that's how you govern, is whatever everybody else does. Now you got this thing, which is a colossal mistake. And instead of owning it, he tries to put it on somebody else. And so it's basically like, well, is that how you're going to govern? Like, yeah, when there's a major mistake, you're just going to pass it off on somebody else, or everybody else did it too? It really does give you an insight into how Braun is going to kind of run the show.
Not exactly the crisis management 1.0.
Yeah.
And what you notice is, it goes to those undecided voters. I said Braun's 33% is probably where it's going to be. That's his floor and his ceiling. So as you try to get those undecided voters, you use everything you possibly can. If you're undecided, here's something to think about. Mike Braun got fined $159,000 because he, misreported,
right,
or XYZ. So I expect a lot more of that over the next 30 days and change.
Hey, Abdul, question for you: what would the FEC maybe look worse upon having a treasurer who makes a reporting mistake, or being your own treasurer and making a bunch of colossal mistakes?
I would say probably having a treasurer, because the treasurer is supposed to be sort of the responsible guy. But at the end of the day, though, it doesn't matter. It's still the candidate who's responsible.
This, I got to tell you guys, and Merritt and I have chuckled about this quite a bit. This governor's race has been so disappointing.
It really has.
I mean, six people. I figured somebody would be mildly interesting.
You would hope for peaks and expect the valleys.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was like you guys.
It flatlined a long time ago.
You guys in the media. See, I was in politics at the wrong time because you guys in the media, like Abdul. You know, you were there for the Luger-Murdoch thing where every day it was something fun or, you know, over the top or ridiculous. I mean, those were the good old days. Like, I would have loved to have covered that one. I mean, where every day it's some grenade being thrown at the other side.
And some days you throw the grenade at yourself.
Hatfield McCoys.
Right,
and, you know,
right.
I mean.
It's been a real snooze fest.
I mean, this has been, right? I mean, this has not even been one punch that you're like, well, that was super interesting.
Yeah.
Well, you see, but also, too, you got to remember these guys have been running for like God knows how long now. I expect that to get a whole lot more interesting, unfortunately, over the next 30 days and change because early voting starts on Wednesday.
Somebody had a theory, and Abdul, I'll go to you, this first with you. Somebody who is not really political but knows politics and is connected to a bunch of the political people told me the reason everybody's being so nice to Braun, because I can't understand this. He's clearly the front runner, and they're basically giving him a free pass, is they all think he's going to win, and either through business deals that they need connections with the government or they want jobs in the government, they don't want to piss him off. Is that fair?
I don't agree with that.
I don't agree with that.
But how do you explain just nothing on this guy when there's a litany of things you could just beat him over the head with?
Well, I would argue it's also timing because, once again, I expect life to get a lot more interesting because now the voting starts next week. And when voting starts next week, you got those undecided voters out there. And so I would expect a couple of campaigns to shift to going for those undecided voters. And here's why you shouldn't vote against Mike Braun. And by the way, Eric Doden and Brad Chambers also got millions of dollars.
Yeah. I wish you had asked the poll. Did you know there was an election in May?
Well, we did actually plan to vote on May 7th.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think that's part of the problem is that this is probably sneaking up on people. And there's a big group in the state of Indiana that just don't care anymore.
Yeah, you're right. But we care.
Yeah, we do.
We care. And I care that you two are fabulous. Jim Merritt, Abdul Hakeem Shabazz, thank you.
Thank you.
Think back to when you were a kid. Remember dinner or lunch at grandma's? Down-home cooking that left you feeling refreshed and rejuvenated, and oftentimes with plenty of leftovers to keep the good memories coming. That's what it's like at the Honeysuckle Hill Bistro, located on beautiful lakeside property in Brazil. Open Friday and Saturday for dinner and Sunday for brunch, owners Jody and Andy Lorman would love for you to be their guests for a dining experience that's totally worth the drive. The Honeysuckle Hill Bistro. Call 812-443-3003 for reservations.
FreedomFoodsIndiana.com is here to bring fresh fruits and vegetables right to your door. No need to ever leave the home or deal with the stress that is having to go to the store. FreedomFoodsIndiana.com makes it easy to order fresh fruits and vegetables online with the click of a mouse. I'm Rob Kendall. I love FreedomFoodsIndiana.com, and I know you will too. It's a great way to keep your family eating right without the hassle of having to shop. FreedomFoodsIndiana.com.
Rob Kendall, Jim Merritt, Abdul Hakeem Shabazz, the program is State House Happenings, your weekly look at what's going on with Indiana politics and government. Don't forget, you can find Abdul on Twitter at ATTYAbdul, at ATTYAbdul, and be sure to bookmark his very fabulous, outstanding, and totally amazing website, IndyPolitics.org, IndyPolitics.org. While you're there, get yourself a cheat sheet subscription. Jim Merritt, he is on Twitter at Jim_Merritt, at Jim_Merritt, and he has a very fabulous podcast, Merritt in the Morning. Merritt in the Morning, a weekly podcast. You can find it on YouTube and Facebook. YouTube and Facebook, just search Merritt in the Morning. Me, I'm on Twitter at Rob M. Kendall, at Rob M. Kendall, and you can hear me weekdays 9 until noon, the Kendall and Casey Show on 93.1 WIBC. Before we go today, I want to thank our brand new sponsor here on State House Happenings, the Honeysuckle Hill Bistro and Cottage, and we are so pleased to have them. That is just a fabulous property out there in Brazil, and man, it's great for that Saturday and Friday and Saturday dinner option, the Sunday brunch, and they've also got that cottage, that little Airbnb style of housing there that is just great for a weekend away. The Honeysuckle Hill Bistro and Cottage, the brand new sponsor of State House happenings. And also, as always, we want to thank FreedomFoodsIndiana.com, FreedomFoodsIndiana.com. Farmer Ryan Schliemann and his family, man, they have just been with us for so many years, and we are so pleased to have them also as a part of State House Happenings. And while we love all of our fabulous sponsors that make State House Happenings possible, we also love you, the listener. And, you know, we don't get a chance to do this enough, so I wanted to take a moment while we had a few extra minutes here and just thank you. Thank you for being a part of State House Happenings with us each and every week. You know, obviously do a regular daily show on WIBC, but I really enjoy being able each week to sit down with Abdul and Jim Merritt and being able to talk about the latest on what's going on with Indiana politics and government. This show is just one of my most favorite things I get to do each week. And again, couldn't do it without our sponsors, but we also couldn't do it without you, the very fabulous listeners. And we just so love all of you who are so engaged in Indiana politics and government. You want to know more about it. You want to be more involved. And you look to us to give you some of that information. So we feel very blessed. Thank you again for joining us this week. For Abdul Hakeem Shabazz, for Jim Merritt, I'm Rob Kendall. You've been listening to State House Happenings.